Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair today. For more information about all the WOSU events on Kids Day here, check out our website at WOSU.org. Of course, we're also monitoring the latest in last night's accident at the fair. In the past few minutes, the State Highway Patrol has released the names of the victims who were killed and hurt when a ride malfunctioned. Police say 18-year-old Tyler Jarrell of Columbus was the man who died. The injured are identified as 36-year-old Tamika Dunlap of Reynoldsburg, 42-year-old Russell Franks of Columbus, 19-year-old Kazia Lewis of Columbus, 22-year-old Jacob Andrews of Pataskala, 18-year-old Jennifer Lambert of Columbus, 19-year-old Abdi Hakim Hussein of Columbus, and a 14-year-old boy whose name is being withheld at the request of the family. Those are the victims of last night's accident when an arm of a thrill ride broke off. Officials continue to search for the source of the problem. 89.7 NPR News will bring you updates all day and will provide complete coverage on WOSU.org. So stay with us for that. The Ohio State Fair is known for many things: the butter sculpture, the livestock, the fried food, and then there are the floriculture competitions that attract floral designers from across the state to show their creations. We're talking all things flowers this hour, from the garden bed to the floral arrangement. Joining us is Master Gardener, floriculture judge, and competitor, Marlene Purdy. Welcome to the show, Marlene.
Hi, it's my pleasure to be here.
Also with us is gardening coach Tisa Watts. Welcome to you, Tisa.
Thank you.
We're in the thick of summer now, right? Is it too late to plant something for fall, Marlene?
Absolutely not. There are things that can be planted year-round, practically.
What would you be planting right now in August?
Actually, believe it or not, I have transplanted rose bushes in August. I don't advise it, but it can be done.
That's a dangerous thing.
I know.
Why is it dangerous?
Because between the heat and the humidity and everything else, it's just too much stress on a plant to take it out of the ground, put it back into the ground somewhere else, and then expect it to thrive. It's right now in the peak of its growing season, and so it's very difficult for you to ask it to do two things well at once.
You know what I've been doing lately is rescuing dying plants at grocery stores
Oh.
where they're all half off.
Oh,
and
yes.
I just can't stand it. They're dying there, and they're going to be thrown out eventually, and I figure I can give it a new life. Now, it won't look very good right now, but maybe next year, if it's a perennial, it'll look good.
I've had fairly good luck planting and transplanting right now. I've been moving some things out of my garden, and one of our local restaurants in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where I live, they have a bed that was a total disaster, and so we go to the restaurant all the time. And so we took over one whole raised bed that they have. And whenever my plants get out of hand at home, I'll dig them and move them over to the restaurant. And my husband went over and deadheaded all the Becky Daisies the other day. And the bed looks just glorious. So
that's a great idea. You have a backup for, you know, when you need to move your plants and rehab them before you bring them back.
I don't know. Things are looking kind of rough out there right now, I have to say.
Yeah, and I, as far as rescuing plants from the grocery store or from the big box stores and things like that, I think once you have a little bit of experience at gardening and you kind of have a sense of what plants are going to survive, even if they look a little rugged right now, that's one thing. But if you're a beginning gardener, don't do the rescue thing because it's so discouraging. and better to pick those perennials that, you know, might look a little beat up, but you know if you give them some love, they'll come back.
Yeah, they're like little puppies.
And I might add the tale about the rose bush, I don't recommend that at all. Mm. It was a case that my mother had passed away. We were selling her farm, and I wanted one of her rose bushes.
Right.
And so I had no choice but to move it in August.
Isn't it interesting that emotional attachment we get to plants?
Oh, my heavens, yes.
Do you have a favorite?
Oh, I can't pick
you
a
can't.
Favorite.
I'm okay, one they of might eight. Be, they might be listening.
Yeah, well, I'm one of eight kids, and my mother was always very diplomatic about who her favorites were. You just can't pick one. But, yeah.
What about you, Marlene?
I guess I am a little ADHD because I will get into something and then I'll get into something else. But right now I am into echinacea.
Which is the coneflower.
Coneflower. And I don't like the purpurea, which is the common. I like all the specialty ones.
All the fancy hybrids.
And right now I have over 70 different varieties.
Wow. I have about three. One is a sombrero. Have you heard of that?
I have the sombrero salsa red. I have sombrero orange and sombrero yellow.
Wow.
I think I have three of the sombreros.
They're very fun. They're kind of droopy looking, but they're awful cute.
Mm. And, but, are you experiencing any of the head-dropping weevil action?
I haven't had any of the head-dropping weevil action.
Yeah, some folks
What's going on there?
Folks are reporting, and this I'm starting to see it around Columbus as well, and that is you'll notice that your coneflowers look fine, the plant looks great, and all of a sudden the head just sort of looks like it fell over, and it'll eventually drop off, and it's a weevil that gets in there, and it's part of its life cycle to, you know, get in there and then drop the thing to the ground, and then the larvae start over. So if you see that, just try to cut the whole thing off and throw it away. Don't let it sit on the ground.
So cut it right down to the...
No. Just cut the head of the plant off. They're really only interested in that top part, the part that we really like. So
a little bit like the beetles and the roses and...
Yes, they're, well...
Cannas.
Roses and everything. Roses are not for the faint of heart, I always say. You know, they look so easy and beautiful, but they do take some work.
What kind of work do roses take, Marlene?
Fertilizing, spraying for black spot, which is big, and also finding the Japanese beetles, which I will go out one morning, and there is this teeny tiny little bud that's only about an inch across, and it has five Japanese beetles on it, and it may not even ever open it. The Japanese beetle devours
it. Sucked
it
all the life out of it.
Yes.
Those are devils, aren't they?
And I go out every day with my little container of water, and I have actually three methods of getting rid of the Japanese beetle. Two of them I probably shouldn't mention on the radio because they're sadistic. But
gardening people are always interested in those.
Yeah.
But I do take out my container of soapy water, and I knock them in. Now, if I get really mad, I will take the beetle, throw it on the ground, and stomp on it. Or if I have my scissors, cutting them in two.
Well, talk about when I was a beginner, I used to actually put up those beetle traps.
Oh, no,
which was the stupidest thing. I know, duh. But, you know, and for one thing, they're horrific to watch fill up.
Oh, yeah.
But number two, they attract the beetles. They don't get rid of them.
People ask me about the traps all the time, and they say, is that a good idea? And I say, really, the only person that you should give that trap to is someone that you really intensely dislike.
Right.
And whose garden you would like to see just completely devastated. Yeah. Because those traps will bring in every Japanese beetle for 5 miles around.
Exactly.
And I kid you not, they're pheromone traps. Yeah. And
they ought to be
Japanese
outlawed.
Beetles are incredibly driven by the smell of scent. And so if you get a few Japanese beetles, when you first see them, it's so important to get on top of it and get rid of them because those scouts will bring in the party. Right. And Japanese beetles love to party.
Yeah.
So if you can take out the first few, you might have a better chance of staving off the rest.
Now, I did have success with the beetle traps before we moved to Fort Wayne. Our neighbors behind us had these big pine trees, and they never mowed behind the pine trees. And I always had to mow the back part of their yard behind the pine trees. So I hung the beetle traps in the pine trees.
Oh, sneaky.
If I was going to mow their yard, they were going to take my beetle traps.
Wow. You are devilish. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair. The weather's holding for us. Come on down and join us. It's WOSU Kids Day at the fair. We have all kinds of, who is that over there? Daniel Tiger is here right now. We're going to have, there's another... someone else over there. There's all going to be all kinds of characters all day long. So come and join us down at the fair. We are located, I can't remember.
Central Park.
Where else?
Next
we're in Central Park. So come on down right by the Cardinal Pavilion over there. So
with a great view of the giant slide.
With a great view of the giant slide, which, by the way, is not operating today while they continue to investigate and test. Inspect all of the rides at the Ohio State Fair. We will, of course, keep you updated on the tragedy that occurred yesterday at the fair. They're doing forensic investigation of the ride that did break last night and hurled one person to their death, and seven others are injured, including a 14-year-old victim. If you have a question or comment, though, about flowers, that's what we're focusing on this hour. give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests are Marlene Purdy. She's a master gardener, a floriculture judge here at the fair, and a competitor. Also with us, Tisa Watts, a gardening coach based in Columbus. We love to get your questions about flowers, but it's about flowers, so you know, focus, focus, focus. 614-292-8513. Are there good flowers for beginners to grow? Marlene Purdy?
I have found things like Dusty Miller, although that's not actually a flower, but it's very colorful in the garden. And petunias are not difficult to grow. Geraniums. And some people do the zinnias. I do not do zinnias because my sister does the zinnias, and I don't have to. And some of the more difficult ones, well, they're actually not difficult to grow.
Yeah.
I really like Lysianthus. They're absolutely
gorgeous. Is there a common name for that? Or is Lysianthus the common name?
I think Lysianthus, their estoma, I think, is another name for them, I believe.
And what do they look like?
They look almost like roses in a way. The doubles do, at least. And some of them are shorter, some of them are taller. And the colors are usually in purples and pinks and whites and kind of an ivory color. And they make great cut flowers. Actually, they're very popular for wedding flowers.
Okay.
But they're easy to grow. But you have to buy the plants. You can't
start from seeds.
At least a beginner couldn't start from seeds because you have to start the seeds in the middle of the winter. And so I usually buy the plants. And they bloom actually after the frost even. They will bloom all summer and into the fall. And that's why I really like Lysianthus.
Yeah. And I think, too, you bring up a good point for, you know, plants that are easier for beginners to grow, and that's to go with transplants, maybe not start from seed if it's your very first go at gardening.
I would agree with that.
Are there flowers that are particularly vulnerable to deer? I'm having a problem with deer this year.
Deer think that flowers are like appetizers. So, yeah. You know, they come along and they take all the blooms off the geraniums, right, or the roses. There are certain classes of plants or certain families of plants that are less tasty to deer than others. And those are usually the ones that are quite strong tasting, things in the mint family, which fortunately also does bloom quite a bit and are very attractive to pollinators.
I don't get flowers on my mint.
Do you know?
No.
It might be the variety of mint that you're growing.
Okay.
But also, mint is a huge family. That includes all the sages. It includes it's a big, big family. A lot of the herbs, not just mint, but other herbs are also in that family. And the other thing is that I find, too, that deer will often leave alone anything that's a euphorbia. It's got a slightly toxic sap that even people need to avoid as well. Although most people grow that more for foliage, I think. And then anything that has sort of a rough leaf, a lot of times the deer will leave alone. I think one of the best strategies is to not plant a huge batch of something they love altogether. It's actually better if you sort of spread it out and sort of hide it and tuck it in here and there. And they do sort of, as they say, they graze. They don't just necessarily, if you give them a big bunch of food, they're going to go straight for it.
Yeah, it's like a buffet.
Exactly.
Rabbits are a little bit like that
they
also.
They can be. Yeah, we put up a fence around one of our gardens, and you can see where the deer lean over and bend the chicken wire. Yeah,
oh, that's great.
I guess I've been lucky.
We do have deer
in our neighborhood, but they have not bothered anything.
They usually
of mine.
Don't. Yeah, they usually don't us. But boy,
you could do some strategic planning, and some of that too is blocking with other plants and interrupting their path through your property. When I lived in California, we lived in deer territory. And when I was also working at a nursery, so I was lucky. I got to bring home a lot of plants to try out on the deer. And anything that's real thorny or spiky, they'll also leave that alone.
Catherine in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I have a question about companionship gardening and for flowers. I do it a lot for vegetable gardening. But
what do you
for
mean
flowers,
by companionship gardening?
Where you plant things together that help each other. For instance, with roses, you would plant things from the allulum, I can't say that, family. In other words, the garlic, onions. The garlic and onions, they detract the bad bugs. And then you also plant parsley around roses, and I think the parsley actually does something good. It does something good for the roses. I don't remember what. And so I was wondering, and it's a good way to avoid pesticides. And I was wondering if you all do that, if you find it effective, if you have some ideas.
Okay.
All right. We all know about marigolds, plant marigolds around your garden to keep the bugs away, but just other companions.
Okay. Well, I mean, what do you think? I mean, do you companion garden? Do you plant things near each other that help each other? I've heard of that before.
My feeling about companion gardening is that there's a lot of anecdotal evidence about it. A lot of people, you know, say, oh, this has worked for me or this hasn't worked for me. And there's not a lot of scientific follow-up. There hasn't been a lot of academic studies. And I really am a science-based girl. And so I'm not saying that it doesn't work, but I haven't seen the evidence that it does work. I do think that, especially with vegetable gardening, that you can plant certain things or amend the soil with certain things that will be beneficial or detrimental to a crop that follows it. When it comes to things like the marigolds, people often just sort of take that information at face value, not realizing that they're talking about African marigolds, and they're talking about them in such a degree, such a scale that the home gardener is not going to be achieving the same results. I think that when it comes to IPM, which is integrated pest management, I'm also a master gardener along with Marlene, and they promote that very much, which is trying to use pesticides as a last resort. There are definitely, if you take the scientific approach to insects and really start to understand what their life cycle is, how many broods do they have a year, when do they emerge, when do they stop, what can we do to facilitate or not facilitate it? The reason we have so many Japanese beetles in Columbus is because we have so much turf.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Yeah. Less turf, we'd have fewer Japanese beetles. Now, there's other factors involved in why they are so successful in this environment. But, there's companion planting is not to be dismissed, but I would like to see more evidence of actual established relationships before it's something that I'm willing to promote.
And the only companion planting that I've been involved in are some of the plants that, for instance, daffodils. You're not supposed to cut them down. They're supposed to allow them to die down naturally. And a lot of people think it looks very ugly. So if you companion plant those with daylilies, the daylilies will camouflage the daffodils, and you can let them die a natural death.
Mm-hmm. And camouflage
yes.
planting. I like that.
Mm-hmm. So
I get that.
That's one of the things that I have done extensively.
We are talking about flowers today. My guests, you just heard from Marlene Purdy. She's a master gardener and a floriculture judge here at the Ohio State Fair and a competitor. Also with us, Tisa Watt. She's a gardening coach based in Columbus. She's also a master gardener in Franklin County. She has her degree in horticulture and landscape design. So if you have a question or comment about growing flowers and coming up arranging flowers, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We are broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair. If you want to know more about the accident last night at the Ohio State Fair, one of its rides broke. One person was declared dead last night at the fair. Seven others are injured. You can go to WOSU.org, and we'll keep you updated right there, as well as on 89.7 NPR News all day long. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We are broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair today. For more information, check out our website at WOSU.org. There is a lot going on here today. It's WOSU Kids Day at the fair. There are costume characters that will be on site throughout the day. Daniel Tiger, Super Y, Nature Cat, Sid, Clifford, Jet, and Katarina Kitty Cat. There's no specific schedule. You just have to show up and hope, you know, luck will be with you. There is also an Explorer's Trolley Pass scavenger hunt. It's a hunt that takes kids throughout the south end of the fairgrounds on a quest to collect encounters at the following locations. The Vet Ed Center, the Swine Building, and also the Agriculture and Horticulture Building. So check that out. When you fill out the scavenger hunt card, you return to the WOSU booth, and you get to exchange that for a WOSU back-to-school kit. So check that out. Also want to let people know that there's a Wounded Warrior Dogs Project. There will be a demonstration of 8 wounded working military dogs to raise awareness and financial support for wounded veterans. And the demonstration is at the Cardinal Hall for the duration of the fair, so that's something you definitely want to check out, right? We are talking about flowers today. Summer is the season of flowers in Ohio, and the Ohio State Fair is where competitive flower arrangers flock every year. Still with us is floriculture judge and competitor Marlene Purdy. Marlene, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And also Tisa Watt. She's a gardening coach based in Columbus. She's also a master gardener, and she's got her degree in horticulture and landscape design. Tisa, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
As far as growing flowers for display, for arranging, what works and what doesn't? Marlene Purdy?
I'm a bad one to ask that question because when I get my flowers blooming in the garden, I don't want to
cut
them.
I know the feeling.
And so I end up going to
Kroger,
yes, or any other flower supply place, yeah, because I don't want to cut them. Although I did cut a lot of my papyrus, my King Tut papyrus.
Okay.
And
for
my display here at the fair.
Yeah.
And luckily I have enough of it that I can't even tell it's missing. So I grew a lot of it this year in containers, and I have an arrangement of 7 containers on my patio that are similar but not exactly alike that I have in a grouping.
But some flowers like to be pruned back, right, Marlene?
But I don't cut them until they're...
But which flowers? For people, I mean, so people know that some...
Oh, zinnias are easy to cut and put in.
And they
in.
Grow back.
Yes.
Coreopsis, daisies will also do well in a container. I'm always curious if there's like a class of plants or a way of generalizing how to best harvest plants for containers and whether, like I know with some plants you're supposed to crush the stem or you're supposed to burn the stem or you're supposed to do some other rude thing to the plant. But if there are certain groups of plants that actually do better in containers than others.
I have found that some of the tropicals do very well in containers.
Yes.
And sometimes you don't even have to put them in water. They will stay for quite a while.
Well, like the bird of paradise.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I have some of those.
Banana plants?
I've not used banana plants.
Okay.
But
we
I've,
just
used,
have to have one
I've used heliconia. And the nice thing about heliconia, even after it's done, it dries beautifully. And then you can spray it and use
people
it.
Do that with the alliums, too, of course.
Oh, yes.
Those dry on the stem and then spray paint them.
I have actually seen people spray paint them in their gardens
to
add
to.
Color
what?
To their gardens. I don't, but I have seen people that have actually gone out and spray painted their alliums as they're still standing in the
when
garden.
Crafting oh runs amok, yes.
Let's see, is it Licia in Worthington?
Licia.
Okay. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, I have a question. I visited a relative in upstate New York a couple weeks ago, and she gifted me a plant called a Budalon flowering maple.
Okay.
And I've never seen them in our nurseries here, and it's absolutely beautiful. And I'm concerned I brought it to a zone that it can't live in, but it's doing really well. And I just was wondering if you know anything about the plant.
I had a flowering maple several years ago, and I had it inside. I use it as a house plant.
When I lived in California, they were a very popular nursery plant, and you would often see them in people's yards, and they would get 3-4 feet tall and wide. here in this, but they are not rated for Zone 5 by any stretch. Where I lived in California, the Bay Area was Zone 9. And I think we saw frost maybe four times in 20 years. So, yeah, enjoy that abutilon right now. Feed it. It needs probably good morning sun, maybe dappled afternoon sun, and plenty of moisture. And just enjoy the heck out of it until the frost comes. You can try bringing it in the house, but I suspect that there will not be enough humidity to keep it happy over the winter.
Okay. All right. Alicia, thank you very much for that. And let's see. Jody in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Jody.
Hi. I bought a citronella plant this year to put on my front porch in hopes it would keep the mosquitoes away, and haven't really noticed any difference. I wasn't sure if there's anything I'm supposed to be doing, like if we should rustle the leaves or break the leaves, or
what's
if they're just really
plant?
Not that effective.
Yeah. What
I
is
got
a
it at Oakland Nursery. Uh-huh. It was... I mean, that's just what it's called, was a citronella plant. It's a,
is it a scented
green
geranium?
Leafy. I don't, it didn't say that on the card. It just, it was called a citronella plant.
Okay. I'm guessing it's probably
and
a scented geranium.
And it referenced, you know, a good plant to put on patios to help keep mosquitoes away. Mm-hmm. But I've seen mosquitoes, like,
okay.
right next to the
Marlene
plant.
Marlene Purdy, you're shaking your head.
I have seen a number of plants, mostly in an herb section, that say they are supposed to keep mosquitoes away. And I have to laugh because at our conservatory plant sale that we have on Mother's Day weekend every year, they have them listed, but they always have a caveat at the bottom. They do not really keep mosquitoes away, even though they say they do.
No, if you truly want to keep mosquitoes away using that plant, put a fan behind it and then put yourself in front of the plant, because mosquitoes are not very good flyers. And really, the only thing that will keep mosquitoes away are products like DEET and keeping the air moving. Actually, using a fan is actually remarkably effective.
Getting rid of setting water.
Yes, get rid of all the water nearby that you can, which is almost impossible, really, in this environment, especially with all the rain we've had. Mm-hmm. And there are some folks that have had success with, like, essential oils and things like that. Again, don't have as much experience with that.
Okay. Jody, good luck with the mosquitoes. If anyone else out there has a question or comment about flowers, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests, Marlene Purdy, Master Gardener and Floriculture Judge and Competitor, and also Tisa Watts, Gardening Coach based in Columbus. She's also a Master Gardener and has her degree in Horticulture and Landscape Design. So you want to talk about flowers and landscape design, she might be the person to ask. We are broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair today. The WSU tent is located in the middle of the fairgrounds at Central Park. Classical 101 will be broadcasting after I take my leave, but there will be WOSU kids characters all day long, all kinds of things for kids to do here, so check it out.
I'm curious what you're judging. Are you a judge
not,
at this show?
I am not judging this year. I have judged the horticulture plant specimens. I've done that in the past.
So that's like the individual plants. Mm-hmm. And what about like the arrangements? I was over there earlier today, and they have some really fun arrangements and fun themes that people were competing on.
That's what I'm doing this year. I'm doing the first show and the third show this year. I can't do the second show because I'll be judging the Wood County Fair flower show in Bowling Green.
So which categories are you in?
I am in 7 of them.
Oh, my
goodness. Plus, I've done a niche. Oh. So, and I have to go put my tags on when I get done here yet. I have 1 hour to finish up. Normally, I take the full time from 8 until 1 to put my designs together, and so I had to rush this morning. We were here waiting before the building was open. Mm-hmm. We come in to Columbus usually on Wednesday night, and stay overnight so I can be over here first thing in the morning to start setting up, and we'll stay overnight tonight, and then after we tear down tomorrow evening, we'll.
It's a lot of work, isn't it?
Yes.
And yes, it is.
I'm not from this area, so I have a little bit of a drive then when I get home.
We have an email from Karen. She says, I bought a plant with a beautiful two-tone purple flower that bloomed all summer and the deer never touched it. Now you're just bragging, Karen. I finally identified it as a double form of osteospermum or African daisy. What do we know about that?
Very easy to grow. I have them under my mailbox. We didn't like... We live in a subdivision that has the neighborhood mailboxes in our front yard in the tree lawn. And rather than weed whacking around the posts of the mailboxes, my husband edged and we put in a flower bed around them. And I use those under the mailboxes. And
so they can hold up to that kind of abuse.
And they can, they're an annual.
I was going to say, you probably plant them as an annual here.
I plant them as an annual.
They are perennial in warmer climates, but yeah. Oh,
I plant them as an annual and they keep blooming. I have to deadhead them, but the neighbors seem to appreciate. I have rose bushes and the Lysianthus are along the sidewalk, and one year the Lysianthus would fall into the rose bushes and they were the most gorgeous purple. And everybody was wondering where I had gotten the purpley blue roses, but they were the Lysianthus that had kind of fallen over into the rose bushes.
I always like that kind of that magic when two plants kind of come together and they become something bigger than what they each are.
A good example of that is planting baby sprath next to rose bushes.
Mm. Oh.
And I do that because it looks like a bouquet.
Yeah. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair. It sounds like there's a band getting warmed up over here. We are located in the middle of this fairgrounds at Central Park, and there's a whole WOSU public media operation going on here because it's WOSU Kids Day at the fair. If you want to learn more about that, you can check out the link on our website at WOSU.org. It looks like currently we have some characters on hand right now, and I'm not sure who it is, but we'll try to figure that out and let you know when we come back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair today. For more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org. Summer is the season of flowers in Ohio, and the garden around the house are artfully arranged in a vase. For the more competitive floral arrangers among us, the State Fair provides a venue to compare and contrast the styles. Still with us is floriculture judge and competitor Marlene Purdy. Marlene, thanks again for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
And gardening coach Tisa Watts. Tisa, thanks a lot for joining us.
Happy to be here.
We talked a little bit about competition a few minutes ago, but I wanted to ask you, how does anyone even get started as a competitive floral arranger?
I joined Garden Club back in 2000 when I lived in Bowling Green, Ohio, and I live in Indiana now, by the way. And luckily, there were several people that were mentors. Unfortunately, both of them are now deceased. Pat Tyson and John Moore were magnificent designers, just absolutely spectacular. But they would go to competition at the county fair, and they would help the other designers. Even though they were competing against them, they would offer suggestions for improvement. And I probably would have never gotten hooked if it had not been for those two individuals. And once I got hooked, that was it.
Are the designs you see at a county fair, at the state fair, are they all done by amateurs?
Absolutely.
You can't be a florist then.
That is correct.
And what are the requirements? Any old thing you want to put in there?
They go according to the Ohio Association of Garden Clubs judging criteria.
Uh-huh.
So it would help to be familiar with what their designs are.
But
they're still pretty flexible, especially here at the state fair and at the county fairs. They try to write the schedules so that anybody can compete. I have to laugh because I judge flower shows in Indiana as a master gardener, and the criteria are very, very different. There you have bouquets, not floral designs.
What's the diff?
A bouquet is when you take a group of flowers and put them together up in an appealing manner and put them in a vase.
Okay.
When you're doing floral design, there are certain criteria as far as depth and color and all that. So there are a whole different set of criteria.
Are there different styles that you compete in?
They
classes,
actually
have,
they
I
have
guess?
Different classes, yeah. Such as there may be a, I'm trying to think, some of them they've got going just right now, spatial thrust or a sculptural form, and they have different criteria for each one of those.
Okay.
And, well, one of them they have, I'm trying to think just off the top of my head.
What do you compete in?
Just about anything. I think I may have been the only tapestry they had this year.
And what's that?
That is, it looks basically like a tapestry that you would have in
hanging on your wall.
Hanging on your wall, yes. And so you take the flowers and you group them in a geometric manner. And it may have lines, circles, squares. You can do just about anything.
And you paint pictures with them?
No.
No. Okay.
How big is it?
Mine is not real large. Mine is probably about 18 inches tall, and which is one of the smallest designs I did because it takes so many flowers that I didn't do a very large one.
What kind of flowers lend themselves to tapestry design?
I used, let me see, I have liatris. I have, let me see, what else do I have in there? I have some dried yarrow that's been painted. And I'm trying to think what else I have in there. Hypericum. And I've actually used some sliced paper packing material that I've rolled up. I used a bamboo placemat. And let me see what else.
This and that, right?
Yes. And I had some, and I'm trying to think some greenery that I just tore it apart and stuck it into Oasis.
You mean the flower foam?
Yes.
Yeah. Huh.
Let's turn to some callers right now. We'll continue our conversation about competition. But Jane in Lancaster, you're on the air. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a great-grandmother who showed dahlias at the Dark County Fair every year. It was highly competitive. My question relates to dahlias today. I know she always dug them up before the winter frosts and the ground would get hardened, but now that we have kind of a different climate now, how do you handle dahlias? Do you have to dig those bulbs anymore, or are there varieties now that will, you know, you don't have to overwinter?
Marlene Purdy?
I dig mine because I don't trust them making it through the winter.
I didn't dig mine last year, and they didn't make it. So there you go.
I always tell clients, the USDA may be changing our climate zone and so forth. But really, when you're choosing plants and deciding what zone you are, go for five. Because then you're not going to be disappointed when we do have those really cold winters. And, you still need to lift the dahlias.
That's okay. Along the lines of, I love agapanthus.
Oh, yeah.
And I tried one. They said it's supposed to be for zone 5 now. Mm. And so I'm giving it another chance. I planted them. Then I went to New Zealand, and they're ditch weeds in New Zealand. And it's so disheartening.
Well, they're called Lily of the Nile, you know, so it gives you a sense of where they're from.
Yeah.
And whether they have snow in the wintertime.
But in New Zealand, they got to be 5 feet tall and just loaded with blooms, and it was so disheartening.
Yeah, they're considered sort of a shopping center plant in California.
There you go. Jane in Lancaster, thanks for the call. Email from Brittany. She says, I received a potted peace lily plant several years ago. The greenery looks great. It has grown. However, the plant has never flowered again. Is there something that I needed to do to make the plant flower? So an indoor potted peace lily plant.
I would say fertilizer. Repot it from time to time. It does like fresh potting soil. And make sure that it's getting adequate light. It is an indoor plant, but it does actually take a fair amount of bright light. I have a couple of those at home. I'm not great with houseplants, but those are the ones that do the best.
Thoughts, Marlene Purdy?
I have not had any luck with peace lilies.
Really?
No. Okay. I have a lot of indoor plants, but peace lily is not one that I've had any luck with.
There's always that one plant that refuses, you
right.
know, to
like
thrive.
My Christmas cactuses are crazy.
Like off the charts. Huh?
Yes.
Yeah, good year for Christmas cactus. Heather in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Heather.
Hey, how are you guys?
Fine, thank you.
I have Russian sage in one of my flower beds, and it does wonderful, but this year it's very, very droopy. I think it's just, you know, too heavy, so it's drooping. I want to know, when is a good time to prune it back so then next year it might grow up a little more straight instead of drooping on me?
Okay, so when is a good time to prune Russian sage?
I don't prune mine.
I've never pruned mine either.
I don't think it's a very long-lived perennial.
Oh.
I think that might be part of the problem is that, you know, a lot of perennials, especially the ones that bloom really hard, you might have them for 3, 4, 5 years, and then they kind of just bloom their little hearts out. And so it might need to be replaced. If you are cutting it back, though, given that kind of plant, I would probably cut it back in the spring. But again, it doesn't hurt to take it back a little bit now. You know, you can always sort of take back a few stems and see how it does.
I've had mine for, I'm trying to think, we moved into the house in 2004, and I planted it in 2005, and it's still
Is it still the same plant?
Same plant.
It's not reseeding or anything?
I use something to avoid reseeding.
What did you use?
I use Preem.
Okay.
Horrendously.
Okay.
I don't think I ever used anything, and mine still came
still
back
going.
Every year. It moved now since, but the one I had it in my other house.
The other question I would have is it in an area that gets really wet and stays wet? Because it is a plant that does like fast drainage.
Oh, mine is in sandy soil.
There you go.
And at the top of a slope.
There you go. Heather, check that out. Thanks for your call. Email from Susie says that caterpillars are eating my petunias in pots since beginning of season. I'm sad. What can I do?
BT. BT is a very low toxic pesticide that you can use. It's actually based on a bacteria that when the caterpillars eat it, it disrupts their digestive system and it will stop them from eating your plants. Now, it can't do anything to fix the damage that's already been
done.
And
it won't kill the caterpillar.
It will kill the caterpillar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and those mostly come from the European white moth, which, again, not a native moth that is laying caterpillars all over your petunias, all over your brassicas, all over a lot of things. And but this is a good pesticide to use because it is narrow spectrum. It doesn't persist in the environment, and it is safe to use around edibles in the long run if that's something else that you have a problem with.
Marlene Purdy, thoughts?
I haven't experienced the problem. So.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Susie. And then real quick, running out of time, Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Steve.
Hey, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
I have a row of daylilies along the fence, and my goodness, they're hardy and they thrive, and there's lots of foliage, but they don't get as much flowers, many flowers as I'd like. Is there a way to encourage more flowers there?
How is the sunlight?
Oh, it's bright sun right now.
Let me ask you also.
Barely any.
Do they have like a big bloom at the beginning of the season, and then they kind of peter out?
No, it's kind of the opposite. They take a long time to bloom, and then there's not that much.
Can you tell me what color they are?
Orange, and I think they're kind of just a wild variety somebody dug up somewhere.
What we call the ditch lily here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are right now blooming, I have noticed, around Columbus. But they are not necessarily a big repeat bloomer. Daylilies tend to fall into one of two categories. There's the ones that bloom once, and they're spectacular, and they tend to be very specimen-type plants. And then there's the others like Stelladoros or what's the other one? Happy Returns. Those are repeat bloomers, and they'll come back. So what I would suggest...
But not as big.
Yes.
Those
orange ones are like kapow.
Yeah.
But if you mix in some of those, like the Happy Returns, you would have a much longer bloom period, and it would be kind of pretty together, I think, too.
And I'm wondering if they need to be separated.
Oh. That's also really important.
Thin it out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, Steve, hope that helped. I wanted to ask you, Marlene Purdy, when you're planning a display for competition, can you give some tips to people about how to make it last?
Number one, select flowers that are going to last. I have used some flowers that you just don't use because they're going to give out very quickly.
What are the best flowers? What are your favorites?
The tropicals, as I mentioned earlier, work very well. And some of the plants are flowers that actually can be dried. They will do very well.
You mentioned
liatris do very well.
Yarrow,
yes. Anything that will dry usually does very well. And so I try to select flowers that are going to work well. And then make sure you keep them watered. And if you're going to do containers at home for vases, make sure you change the water regularly because they do. And also, make sure that you have no foliage below the water line because foliage will cause the water to deteriorate. And so if you change the water regularly and keep the foliage out of the water, usually you can have pretty good luck with most of your cut.
So let's, like, for instance, take a fern leaf. You want to strip all the foliage wherever it's going to be in the water, and then you can have the rest of the fern leaf flittering around up there.
Or even a flower. When I was doing the hypericum today, there was a whole bunch of leaves that were down lower that I had to keep stripping the leaves off, so I made sure that there were no leaves in the water.
Do you use a preservative at all in the water?
I don't. I have found that it doesn't help that much, and sometimes it does just the opposite.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So I use no preservative in the water at all. Some people do, and...
Do you freshen up the cuts at all when they're...
When I'm doing an arrangement, I cut it right before I put it in the arrangement, yes.
Okay.
And if I'm going to keep a vase of flowers at home, I will, when I change the water, I will retrim all the flowers.
And does the container matter?
It needs to be something that's got a solid surface. You don't want something that's going to absorb or leach.
Okay.
And so that makes a difference.
What about metals?
I use a lot of metal containers.
All right.
In fact, the pin holders, a lot of them are in containers, and so I will not even have a vase. Kensans is another name for them. In other words, it's got a base with little...
Oh, like the old flower frogs.
Yes,
although it's got those straight up pins in it.
Yes, but not the flower frogs that have the glass with the holes in it. That's another.
No, that's a different thing. Yeah.
Okay, but the ones with the pins, yes. And I have found the ones in the little black containers. They're great because you can put them just about any place. And I use water tubes, not only the plastic ones, but I use the metal ones that will attach to my metal. I have a lot of metal apparati, I call it, that I use for my flower arrangements.
We're running out of time, but I wanted to ask how you judge a floral arrangement.
It's based on the fundamentals that go into good floral arrangements, like the color, the depth, and things of that nature.
So they're very specific things you're looking for. It's not as subjective as people might think.
It is somewhat subjective, but within limits.
Gotcha.
We actually have a schedule that a scorecard that we follow.
Well, Marlene Purdy, thank you so much. Good luck in your competitions at the Ohio State Fair.
Thank you.
It's Marlene Purdy. She lives in Indiana. She's a master gardener, floriculture judge, and a competitor. Also with us, Tisa Watts, gardening coach based in Columbus, master gardener, Franklin County, degree in horticulture and landscape design. Thank you for your time today as well.
It was great fun. Thank you.
It was fun being here.
Couldn't do it without the All Sides staff. Producer Michael DeBonis, assistant producer Shia Lenat, All Sides interns Kelly Rudolph, Kyle McKinnon, Aaron Kinkley, and Owen Doherty. Alan DeCenzo is a composer of our theme music, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, and of course, our Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla. Love you, Kev. And Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Love you, Eric. Thanks to everybody for listening. Don't forget to stop by the Ohio State Fair today. WOSU Kids Day at the Ohio State Fair. There's all kinds of stuff for kids to do. Lots of characters here to meet. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.